Okay, I think we're recording. Good morning, it's Shabbat 29th of June, and my name is Keith. It's been exam week for me, so we're not going to get wild and crazy here with a lot of things. I'm going to take just some things that we've been doing in one of my classes. It's an archaeology class. So if you're new here, typically what this Bible study focuses on is sort of the life of Jesus within his Jewish context. But we're going to do something a little bit different today, simply because it's been a crazy week for me. So we're gonna try to understand this united monarchy. It's a really, morning Herbert, it's a terribly controversial thing when you try to put it in a historical context. These guys, David and Solomon, that's what I mean by united monarchy, if you're not familiar. So they present us with some problematic situations to try to understand them in a historical context, being real. And we'll get to that. Hopefully I can present maybe a convincing argument, or at least throw data at you that can help you to maybe make a decision on your own. You have, there are some pieces of paper floating around. Let's just talk about, before we get to united monarchy, let's do a little bit of back history on Israelites. So not so much their early history with Abraham, I mean like when they come into the land after they've been in Egypt, where do they come from? Where do they come from? They come from the south, okay, but when they enter the, when they penetrate the land, the east. They come from the east. And they come at what we think is this really chaotic time period. Again, when we talk about dates, I gave you on this side of your paper a list of just archaeological, you know, periods in Israel. Israel has one of these great rich histories of civilizations living here, and it goes way back. If you've ever gone to the Israel Museum, like the first thing you get into and you see is like this prehistoric stuff, and you're like, wow, you know, because when you think Israel, you typically just think Bible, but it has a history way before that. Not so much a written history, although there are documents that date hundreds of years before the Israelites appear, and there's correspondence between empires like Egypt, and they talk about this place. Hundreds of years before the Israelites even show up, so that's pretty unique. It's got quite a history here. I mean, for example, I did mention Abraham, and just to give you an idea of people here, when even Abraham shows up, who does Abraham buy a field, or not a field? I guess it is a field with a cave in it to bury his wife. Who does he buy it from? Ephron. And where is he from? Or what is he? It even gives us kind of his ethnicity. He's a Hittite. So you have different kinds of people groups or influences, you could say, even in this land prior to these Israelites. And there's a lot of different types of people. So it has a rich history. And I want to focus, if you go to this chronological chart, just to give, again, numbers. This is rough ballpark, but it's to help us to understand maybe where Israel fits within all of this. Okay? So I'm going to go right to late Bronze Age. It's just below the middle of the page. Can you find it on that piece of paper? Okay, so this is a really a unique period, because at the end of it, around 1200, there's a big shift, not just here, but universally in the ancient Near East, of just turmoil. Okay, around 1200 BC, there's a lot of turmoil. Cities are being destroyed. We don't have a whole lot of raw data, other than when we excavate, when we dig down, we find just destruction layer everywhere on cities, city states, and things like this at this period, at the turn of the century, and that's a big deal because we have people groups coming into this part of the world that come from the west. They're named the Sea People in Egyptian texts. And this is where we get people groups like the Philistines. They're not the only Sea Peoples that come to this part of the world, but they're one of them. And they even get mentioned in Egyptian texts around this time period, around 1200. And they're a big problem. They're a big problem for the Egyptians to deal with. And Egypt comes down very hard on them. And I'll show you some pictures in a moment. And so late Bronze, that's a significant period of time. At the end of that is where we roughly put Israel coming into the land. There's this window that of turmoil that makes sense for Israel to be, or at least this is one argument. There are many, okay? And I don't want to deal too much with how to date and stuff like that, other than just to give you a window of where Israel is entering. When is the first time we actually hear of Israel outside of the Bible, outside of their own history that they've recorded? Where do we hear of Israel for the first time outside of this, outside of our own texts? Anybody have an idea?
Well, there's the picture, you know, the carrying of the menorah, but I don't know if that's written.
That's a little bit later. Yep, that's a little bit later. I'm talking real early. I mean, that's from about 70. That talks about, if you're thinking of Rome. Yep. But our earliest mention comes from about 1207. We can date that pretty good. There's a pharaoh, his name is Merneptah. And he has a campaign in this part of the world, in Canaan. And he talks about these people groups that he meets. Hatti, which is the Hittites. Canaan, he says, is plundered. Ashkelon has been overcome. Gezer has been seized. Yenoam, we don't know where that is, but it's here, is made non-existent. And he says, Israel is laid waste, his seed is no more. That is the first time outside of the Bible that we have Israel being mentioned. So, and we can date this guy. So we know that Israel is about 1207, that they are already here. Merneptah. So, again, I don't have a...
This is 740.
Oh, yeah, wait. 200 years before David.
So it's got a name before David.
Right. But the way that it's phrased on this stela, this stone... that it's just this royal inscription, I did all this stuff. But he mentions Israel, and it's a very clear text. But it's not as though, when he talks about Ashkelon, Gezer, Yenoam, these are all Canaanite city-states. The determinative, I mean, if you're talking linguistics, the determinative for this people group, this Israel, is more like some kind of semi-nomadic people. They are not fixed to a particular place. But it seems like what makes sense from archaeological data that that he's probably referring to this people group, and it's probably the central hill country based on what we can put together. Again, everything is disputed, but that's what we can put together. But at least they're here when this guy Merneptah, Pharaoh Merneptah, is coming through. Okay? Because he names them. So we don't know how big they are, you know, how spread out they are. We just know that they're here. But it seems like it's a small kind of group, or at least a semi-nomadic group. Yeah,
who,
Peter.
Who was he? What group was he with?
He's a pharaoh from Egypt.
Pharaoh.
Yep, he's big shot. And his, I mean, we can, again, the Egyptians kept great records. For the most part, they keep really nice records for us. And you know, we sort of have to do all the hard work and put them to a date that, you know, we come up with, because they don't talk things like BC, AD, like, you know, based on our calendar. But we can put him between like 1213 and, or 1212 and 1203. And this campaign, scholars have put together, is roughly about 1207, so in this land. So that's a unique, that's our first mention of Israel. We have them as a people, they're in the land. That's a solid piece of evidence for the people in the land. Now, when is David? When does he show up? We have Israelites here. Settlement is going on. Okay, we don't know to what extent, because we only have the biblical source, and it's not. And the biblical source is not trying to be a historical source. It's got a different message to tell, right? It's got theology, it's got wisdom, it's got all this kind of stuff, and it's trying to tell its own story, right? And God is at the center of this, of course. But we who want to try to understand It's not. It's more than just a story. That it's accurate. It's communicating something that's accurate, and it fits a historical time period. We want to try to, you know, solve these little issues, so that we can you know, say, hey, the Bible stands on its feet. It's reliable. It's trustworthy. We can use this as a source. So that's part of our goal today. So we did a little back history. We found out when Israel is mentioned for the first time outside of our biblical text. And we should remember again that Hebrew Bible is communicating, it's compiled, it's put together long after these people lived during these events, like entering the land and David even. The texts that we have are compiled much later than that. There are many who want to just say altogether, since those texts are compiled later, that all this story about David and Solomon, it's not really reliable. Okay? But there are many who say, no, you can't just dismiss it altogether. So we want to look into some of this. So, again, archaeology is just one tool that we're going to be looking at today. It's not the final word. You can't use it to say, well, we can prove this and this and this, because when you do that, you can also have other situations where you can say archaeology proves that it's not that way at all. So you have to be careful with this. It's just what it is. It's material remains of the past. It's what we have to deal with. And again, all of these sites, these biblical sites, all of the we're just dealing with sections that have been excavated. So we have to tell a story and weave a story around what we have excavated, not about what is all there. Okay, so we can't. We have to be careful with things like archaeology, but it is a good source. It's a good tool to use to try to understand what it is that we're dealing with in the Bible. Are we good with that? Okay, so let's focus on this problem of united monarchy, David and Solomon. Of all this period between Samuel and the end of Kings, who do we hear the most about? David and Solomon together roughly about 56 chapters. They get, you know, as far as attention, they get the brunt of it, right? This, you know, everlasting throne is carried out through David. He gets a lot of attention. However, how long does he rule? Yeah, about 40 plus years in Jerusalem. And you got guys like Uzziah or Manasseh, who are written about in the book of Kings, and they get sentences. That's it. Long rules and itty-bitty, you know, written about them. But David and Solomon, just everything. Now, part of the issue is, in our parashah today, the Haftarah portion is on Hezekiah. He's a great example of, we have solid material on this guy, not just in the Bible, but outside of the Bible. He's written about. He's known. This 8th century BC that he lives in, 700s and into the 600s, we know a lot about Israelite history, Judahite history. And we can stand on solid ground and say, you know, the Bible is communicating something that fits a particular period of time. That's easy stuff. But when we get to 10th century, the stuff that is that the Bible is really excited about, we have very little to stand on. As far as material to say, hey, we have a David, we have a Solomon.
Is there a reason for that other than, I mean, is there a reason for that because there weren't records kept, or because it just happens that...
It's a good question.
Is there any other reason why?
It's a good question because we don't have written texts. That's one of the big ones. And the material remains that we have that I'll bring out are problematic. They're problematic because we can't solidify a hard date, which is what people want to do to say, well, we have David, we have Solomon, you know, we can find these guys. And there's a whole school of scholars that say, no, we can't. We could date that later. So we'll try to play around with that. And again, it's not just about dating these guys, is we want to take the Bible seriously and that it's communicating about these guys that are real guys, you know, that were part of God's great plan, and that God was constantly, you know, favoring David throughout this. There's a covenant with David, and so we'll kind of continue to that. And if I don't answer you fully, ask it again at the end. All right, so that's a great question. Okay, so let's open our Bibles. Go to 1 Kings 9. When we talk about United Kingdom, we don't, again, the Bible is not trying to, even in our what we call our historical text, they're not actually giving us historical details. Only maybe a handful of times do we get these like little slips from our writer that gives us this historical data. Typically, he's trying to tell, you know, the writers of the Bible are communicating a different kind of message. But we have some nice little slip-ups that help us out. Okay, so 1 Kings 9:15, if someone just wants to read it. Again, this is, we're talking United Monarchy, so that's David Solomon. What do we have?
This is the reason for the labor force which King Solomon raised to build the house of the Lord, his own house. The Milo, the wall of Jerusalem, Hazor, Megiddo, and Gaza.
Okay, thank you. So what did we just learn there? Again, for most Bible readers, this is not something important. You know, it doesn't speak any spirituality into our life, other than it just tells us something like a little fun fact about Solomon. But for historians, this is a big deal. What does this tell us about Solomon?
Solomon.
Yeah, this United Monarchy period, when from north in Judah, I should draw. Okay, so we have you said Hazor, you said Megiddo,
yeah.
And where did you also
kind of
say?
Gaza.
Okay, so we'll put Gaza right here. And we have Jerusalem like here, something like this, right?
Because there are remains of those places.
Exactly. These are cities.
And they lived. I mean, they existed. They were known.
His house.
And it links them to the house.
So it just gives us that he's doing some building. He's got building projects that when he is taken over from his father. Again, Solomon is the baby of the family. Before Solomon, there is like, you know, turmoil within Adonijah, and he's taken over the throne. But in the end, it's Solomon who gets it, and it's Solomon who's able to keep things together, both north and south, according to the biblical text. Because after Solomon, what happens? There's a split, right? This guy, Jeroboam, who was kind of trying to lead a rebellion against Solomon, whose Solomon squashed, and he had to flee to Egypt and hang out there until Solomon's death. We have, once Solomon dies, Jeroboam comes back, takes the north, 10 tribes from the north, and Rehoboam is left with basically Judah. Simeon gets absorbed into it, and he takes Benjamin as well. Okay, basically two tribes in the south. Now, but Solomon is able to sort of keep what his father started, according to the Bible, together. And what does he do? What does the Bible tell us that he did? He does marry the daughter of Pharaoh, which is, again, it's not like this love thing. It's diplomatic. In the ancient world, it's, you know, this is basically a
treaty.
Yeah, foreign minister, basically. You know, she gets a house and a temple up in Jerusalem, and she's made to feel at home. But what?
The people.
Okay, but what does our verse say? What did our verse that we said read?
The forced labor.
There, yeah. It's corvée labor.
Yeah, but yeah. It's the reason that at the end of his rule, the kingdom is split because
yeah.
His son
yeah.
wants to make it.
And there's, and we're not getting into literary discussion, but there is a fun discussion that I'm trying to think of which. Is it Zakovich and Shimon, who write Lokach Ketuv Betanach? Nice text. I think it's an article out of there, but where Jeroboam, in a sense, if we had northern texts, they would probably think of Judah as Solomon as some sort of pharaoh figure, right? Because he did forced labor, and what do we have Jeroboam doing? He's bringing back old time religion. It says that he put up calves. And the long held. Okay, changing times. But if you look carefully, he's actually doing something that's more related to the desert, the Sinai, than what's going on in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is this much newer entity, right? When you think Bethel, that goes back to Abraham. Mm-hmm. Jeroboam's connecting the north to something that's way older. And maybe that's to get legitimacy. We can only speculate, but he's doing something really unique there. But in any case, it's perceived in Judah as something like an anathema, right? Like the sins of Jeroboam come up all the time. So anyways, that's kind of a literary approach. But let's look at what Solomon has done. He did some building. He builds the temple. He builds his own house. And there are some specific references to not just in Jerusalem, but where else? Three places. Hazor in the north. Where's next?
Megiddo.
In Gezer, okay? They happen to be along a major thoroughfare, so it's a very smart move on his part, because now he sort of has taken command of the economy that's going through his neck of the woods. So that's a very economical move on his part. If we're digging, and again, we're not trying to force something that's in the Bible onto the ground, but what might we expect to find in these places? If he is connected with building these places or fortifying them,
if it's mentioned, you'd hope to find some remains.
You might expect to find material remains from this 10th century. Okay? And in fact, we have 10th century monumental structures from these places. Okay, we'll get into the problems of that, but at least we have something to go on. In Hatzor, we have. I'm just showing you one piece of evidence is the gate complex. Okay, we have a gate complex that can be dated to at least traditional dating to the 10th century. Okay. These six-chambered gate complexes are assumed by the traditional, the biblical archaeologists as being Solomonic, okay? 10th century Solomonic, because prior to the 10th century, we do not have any monumental buildings. We have very little. If you go to your archaeological periods, the early Iron Age 1, has very, very minuscule remains that we could pinpoint as Israelite. It doesn't look to be very much different than Canaanite. Lack of pig bones. Well, so the Canaanites had, very minimal pig bone remains. That's something you find in the Philistines at the same time. They're abundant everywhere. These Westerners liked their pork, I guess. But again, we know that Israelites, this is a forbidden thing. But we also know that the Canaanites didn't eat pork. Or maybe it was taboo. I don't know. So it's hard to pinpoint, at least prior to this period, what is Israelite. But once we get into the 10th century, there are monumental buildings. Big stuff. And if you have monumental buildings, that suggests... What might that suggest?
Wealth.
Okay.
Or skill.
What's that?
Skill.
Skill. Yeah.
They had to have resources to build it, as in tools and equipment.
Exactly. And the
material that they built with.
And the idea.
Had to get it from somewhere.
And exactly. And the idea behind that is there has to be something centralized and organized. You don't just have each city doing their own thing, and yet, to this size that is. Similar to these other places, it suggests at least that there is some sort of organized government. That's what it would suggest. You don't have these monumental buildings for without some kind of organization. So we have at Chatzol, we have at that's also Chatzol, the six-chambered gate. This is the tower on the front part, but you have three on each side. That suggests organization. There's some kind of government, centralized government. That would suggest, or you could argue for that. Okay.
You enter from the side, and there's business going on, and then is the other one? Oh no, that's the entry, and that's the sidewalk. Okay.
And we read 1 Kings 9. So we have also, I mean, these you probably can't make sense of. This is at Gezer. And then Megiddo is, I think I passed through Megiddo. Let me back it up a second. So this has been one piece of evidence that at least the early archaeologists who dug there said, look, we have Solomon. Because they found one at Chatzor, they found one at Megiddo. There was a partial gate excavated at Gezer in the early 1900s that they didn't really make good sense of. They thought it was some like Hasmonean house. And then the guy at Chatzor that was digging there, Yedin, said, let's go to Gezer. I am sure, you know, that the other side of that, you know, Hellenistic house, whatever, is actually part of the gateway that dates to the same period. And sure enough, he was right. Okay? Now, the problem is, we know it's 10th century, but where does it fit within the 10th century? Because Solomon, David and Solomon go from roughly 1000 BC to about 930. After that, we have Rehoboam. So, is it the latter half or the first half? That's part of the issue here. So how might we solve the problem? How, if these are actually Solomon's and not something later in the 10th century, how could we solve that? We have to have another piece of evidence or another person of interest.
We have to have names.
We have to have names. Turns out we have a name. There is a guy who we know from Egypt, a pharaoh, who campaigns here in about 925. And he's during the reign of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, which puts it in the divided kingdom. Not the united monarchy, but the divided monarchy. So there we would have a clean break if we could pinpoint this guy. Anybody know which pharaoh is the guy who comes and campaigns through? Emily, you know this.
Shishak.
There's a guy that, by the name of Shishak, who we can put in this land about 925. There's a biblical text that tells us that he comes in at a particular time. Again, it is one of these slip-ups from the writer that gave us a little historical nugget. And it's in 1 Kings 14, 25. So whoever has that, go ahead and read. Shishak. So, this little bit of information. Fifth year of Rehoboam. What year would that, if Solomon is dead at 930, Rehoboam takes over, what's our date according to the Bible? About 925. 930, 5 years puts him at 925. And so that gives us a hard date if the Bible is, if that historical piece is fitting with what we understand of the dating of David and Solomon. And in any case, we have a palace, a temple to Amun in Karnak, Egypt, where Shishak, on the front as you enter this place, has a massive, gives us a lot of information on his activities, his campaigns. So this is, as you enter this Temple of Amun, and I'll zoom in on this section. He's got about 155, roughly, of little city-states and areas that he campaigns against. And he labels them. He names them. So this is zooming up, and I'll even zoom it in closer. So there's Shishak, and he's got, like, you know, ropes. He's, like, got all these guys by their throats, basically. And I'll take you in a little closer. Oh, this is just clarifying the picture here. You have all these little Semitic guys. This is a typical Semitic-looking figure. And again, they're behind their backs, their hands are tied. So he's taking them captive. And then the name of each place. Okay? So, tons of places. Guess what we don't have? We don't have Jerusalem. I mean, he labels a bunch of other places in the north, but we don't have Jerusalem labeled. Now, that's either because maybe that section of the wall was in disarray and it's lost forever. There's another guy, an Egyptologist, Kenneth Kitchen, who suggests that one of those little cartouches, what do you call those again? Cartouches. One of them may read that he attacked the Heights of David. Now, that's his reconstruction. Some people like it. That's a possibility. It's a possibility. That would at least put Shishak as coming against Judah. But we just don't have anything clear. We have it that he's going up north and stuff. By the way, when Jeroboam flees Solomon to wait out his death, he's going to Egypt, and this guy is ruling. Shishak. This is in Karnak, in southern Egypt.
Karnak.
On the Temple of Amun, Shishak's campaign is listed there. So, where was I?
But he could have bypassed Jerusalem because it was strategically not important.
It could be, and because we know that this even happens elsewhere. I mean, Jerusalem is just kind of out of the way. It's totally possible. Mm-hmm. Although it is, if we're going to take the Bible's word, that's the capital.
Yeah.
Which is, you would expect at least the capital to be seized of some sort, or, you know, hear of some kind of tribute being paid. It's problematic to say the least. But we need that name, right? And I said that within the country we do have this guy's name. I know it's not totally huge. We have a fragment of a stela, a big monumental stela that was discovered at Megiddo, and it has Shishak's name on it. Of all the pieces of this monumental inscription, which we find lots of these monumental or fragments of monumental inscriptions, big things that a pharaoh will set up and say, you know, I did this and this, I laid your land waste, you know, and here's my story. We have things like this, but we never have the name of the person, typically. Here, we have a fragment of a monumental inscription with the guy's name on it, Shishak. Now, the problem with this is that it was found, the fragment was not caught when they were excavating in situ, so they didn't actually see it come out of the ground at a particular level that could help us to date, because we date by stratigraphy, these levels. It was found in a pottery dump from the day. So we can't put it to a particular period. At Megiddo.
Oh.
So it comes from Megiddo, but we can't date it whether the buildings like the gate complex were before him or after him. Mm-hmm. Or a palace that's also found at Megiddo, if it was before Shishak or after him. That is like our clincher, and yet it's like we're holding on to sand again. We can't pin down these structures. So again, these are just some of the problems that we deal with. But at least we know that Shishak was here, not just from our Bible, but from actual evidence. And we know when to put him here. Okay, so let's go to Jerusalem. What about Jerusalem? Surely we would have evidence from Jerusalem. One of the problems with Jerusalem is this: it's the most It's been the most heavily excavated site in all the country. And it hasn't been done very well for the first half of its history of excavation. Simply because the methodology was not, it was very crass and destructive. So there's chance that things were lost, but again, it's a city that's been, you know, a living city for the last 5,000 years. That's also problematic, is that it's never had a gap in history where we can just go up to Megiddo, go up to Hatzor, and it hasn't been, you know, settled in thousands of years. So we can just go ahead and dig down and find all the destruction layers and date things well according to their stratigraphy. Jerusalem is one of the worst places to do this. It's terrible, in fact. So it's a problematic site. Once we get to 8th century and afterwards, we can date things pretty good in Jerusalem. But it's that 10th century that's problematic again. But let's see if what we can do. So you can do with what you want about the gate complexes at Hatzor, Megiddo, and Gezer, the six-chambered gateways. Traditionally, it's been viewed as Solomonic. You'll still go to these sites today if you travel around the country. They'll call them Solomonic. I don't have any problem with it. It's they're 10th century. It shows monumental buildings. And we have a biblical text saying Solomon did it, not that Rehoboam did it. So, why not, right? Why not? Jerusalem, on the other hand, is the capital. This is where you would expect to find some kind of, you know, real solid stuff. This is what we have today. The picture is highlighting this strip of the ancient core of the city. What you walk around in today is not old city in the biblical period. Not until much later. Hey, good morning. Hey. Not until much later does it begin to develop. I mean, mostly what we have today is the walls, at least, are from what period? The Ottoman Empire, like 1530s and a little bit after. That's the walls we see today. Although large sections of it are built on the foundations of Second Temple period stuff and early Hasmonean period stuff. So that's cool. But as far as biblical Jerusalem, it's really the city of David and its core, and then up what's beneath the Temple Mount, which has never been excavated. It would probably start World War III if it was. So let's just hold off our prayers on that and hope that one day there'll be a chance that could tell us a lot. Anyway, so the ancient core of the city. So we want to ask if it's the capital of this united monarchy, a organized, like the Bible portrays it to be, city. Again, we have a ton of details about Solomon's temple buildings, very thorough on its description, and yet we can't do anything with it because if there is anything, it's untouchable at this point in history because of political problems. Do you have a question, Pete?
I was wondering if you're going to deal with outside of Jerusalem.
Yeah.
They found that pillar just recently in Bethlehem.
In Bethlehem? I mean, I'm not aware. What was what's the latest?
Bethlehem. They found something. Yeah,
happy good at David. Oh, no. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's later. That's later. Yes. That's probably more like Hezekiah, if anything. Very Ionic capital, very nice. Yeah.
Or what did it say, City of David or something?
They don't connect it to David, from what I know.
City, they found 35 meters of wall in David.
Sure, that's what we're going to... Okay. Yeah. But that's disputed. That's one archaeologist... So one archaeologist says David, and other ones are like...
Yeah.
Like, let's hold on. We can date it other ways as well. But there are some who jump to it, and others who are a little bit more hesitant just because of the lack of pottery or lack of things that we need to really solidify, clamp it down, and pin it down.
There is pottery.
Yeah, there is. No, but not a lot. Not a lot. So anyways, we have a lot of this description. There are temples of this period, like an Assyrian-Turkish border, that reflect similar building styles. We just don't know. The actual city of Jerusalem. Let's see here. Yeah, we'll go to David's city. There's a particular place. Inga is referring to this area, Area G, that was excavated in the 50s and 60s, and here and there, and then kind of brought back to life again in the past decade under Elad Zal. And that has been...
And where is it?
It's in the city of David. And if you go to visit that area, there's a nice little flowery courtyard area, very nice to just even sit in. Flowers are beautiful, and that's Inga will take you there, and it overlooks a section that we're going to look at called Area G, which is our only section of that excavated area that pertains to what is possibly the 10th century. Other areas we date later to like Nehemiah and Second Temple period, Roman stuff. It's a hodgepodge of historical material remains. And so it can be challenging. But we do have a section that that interests us because we want to understand United Monarchy, particularly because the Bible deals with David and Solomon on such a huge level that we would like to see if these guys are the real deal and if this kingdom was really organized like the Bible portrays it to be. So this section here, Area G, if you go there today, if you go with Inga tomorrow, she'll take you there.
Yeah.
There is this stepstone structure. I have it on the back side of your page. And it's, again, dealing with a few different periods. I think the shading can help us out a little bit if I point it out to you. The stepstone structure is in dark, and then around it you have other buildings. I have I put like horizontal lines through a section that runs kind of on the top of that stepstone structure. It says Northern Tower and Southern Tower. That's Second Temple period, so that's post First Temple period. So at the earliest it could be Nehemiah. When Nehemiah comes back and starts rebuilding, it's possible that it's his wall. And then below, you have this private Israelite dwelling. It's built on top of that stepstone structure. So it has to be later than the structure. So you have the wall. The wall is way later. And then you have this Israelite dwelling. We know it's Israelite because we actually have the name of a guy who lived there, Achiel. And that is built on top of the wall as well. And that we can safely date after the 8th century. 8th century and afterwards. We can safely date that. Now we have pottery that was found on this structure that is possibly 9th century. And then excavators dug beneath that structure and found that there's late bronze material. So if you want to pinpoint this wall, this stepstone structure, and by the way, what is this structure? Every archaeologist knows and interprets this to mean that it's supporting some kind of massive structure on top of it. It was sort of a retaining wall to help support a big structure.
Behind it.
On top of it.
Right on top of the steps. Yeah.
Yep.
The latest piece is that wall is Canaanite, and the wall goes down 50 meters to the very mountain.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yes.
But how do we date this? So it can go a couple of ways. We know that it's early, so it would have to either be at the beginning of David and Solomon. It's possible. Or it's a pre-Israelite structure. And again, everybody calls it Jebusite because the Bible refers to the people before David as Jebusites. So that would put it, at the latest in the late bronze, like in the 1100s to 1200s. Okay? And then David and Solomon reused it because it was already there. They just reused the structure to build their own structure on top. Part of the problem is that we don't have a building on top that's... we don't have, like, large remains. Why? Because Jerusalem is Jerusalem and it's always being rebuilt and destroyed and rebuilt. So it becomes problematic. But at least we can say that there is something we could put in the window of 10th century. We can. Mazal has found some 10th century pottery in her excavation on top as well. But it's not like a clincher. It's just something that we do have in Jerusalem that can help support a claim to the time of David and Solomon. But it also could point to what was there before them. It's possible. But this is part of our evidence here. So this is part of that stepstone structure that you see on your diagram. And then all these different... I'm not going to do all this. Because we've done it. Okay. Yep, you have that picture. We do know that Jerusalem, we have evidence that it grows. So we know that it is a capital city is legitimate because in the days of Hezekiah, the city just booms. Probably what's happening is when the northern kingdom falls in about 722 BC, roughly, that there was already an infiltration. They saw it coming, or that when it was coming, many fled from the north and came south. And so Jerusalem was one of these places that refugees came. And so the city just absorbed them, and then when it came time for the Assyrians, when they were coming down south, Hezekiah had already taken measures to build up and ramp up the city of Jerusalem, and so we get a nice picture of the size of the city. And it just and if you walk down in the old city in the Jewish quarter, there's an opening. And you see this massive, like, 7-8 meter wide wall. Humongous. Just sitting right there. And that's from the days of Hezekiah. So we know that Jerusalem fits the capital city. It fits it. But again, in the 10th century, this is still kind of a challenge. So I want to... And Hezekiah builds... If you've been to Hezekiah's tunnel ever or have heard about it, we can date this quite easily to Hezekiah again, because these later periods are much easier to sort of pinpoint these people.
Is there anything that has his name there?
Hezekiah in the inscription, not in the inscription. You would kind of, you would like to find that, this was done during the days of or this year of Hezekiah, king of Judah. We don't have that. It was sort of like maybe the builders were just kind of like signing off on what they did, how they did it. And even then, the inscription is very unique because they introduce different kinds of spelling, or they put vowels in. And there's words that are not in Biblical Hebrew, like ma'avah. The word for tunnel today comes from that inscription. And that's the first time we've had the word tunnel used. So there's some interesting things going on there, but it's in Hebrew and we can date it. To like 705 or 7, between 705 and 701 BC. Like, really nice. And you can walk through it today, people. 3,000-year-old, 3,700-year-old tunnel you can walk through today. It's awesome. So David, so our problem with David and Solomon is that since we can't really pin them down like we can other kings, like Hezekiah and lots of others, it's led some to just go off on the far extreme and say, well, they must never have existed. It's kind of like King Arthur, these mythic figures. And there are some that say that. They're now deemed as kind of crazy. Mostly because in the early 1990s is the first time we have the name of David referenced. It's the very first time. Outside of the Bible. So that puts him as legitimate. As a legitimate historical figure. How the Bible presents him is its own story. But at least we have something that is physical that we can say he exists. He's the real deal. There's some kind of dynasty because of our understanding of an inscription that was found at this Tel Dan, okay, by and excavator Avram Biran, who dug there for like 60 years. I mean, just an awesome excavation. One of the last days of one of their seasons, someone found this slab and saw an inscription on it in Aramaic that was very interesting. And since then, they've found two other fragments that they've been able to piece together, and that's on your paper. I even gave you the inscription. But in the inscription, look at like, oh, my copy got run off kind of funny, but lines 8 and 9, whatever is in brackets is all reconstructed. It's kind of been fragmented. But King of Israel appears in line 8, and what appears in line 9? That's really interesting. House of David, Beit David. Okay? And this is a big deal, because what does that little phrase tell us? Okay. Is it talking about his actual house?
No.
Not really. No. It's suggesting that there is a dynasty, and its founder was David. And so that right away, kind of caused just a whole different viewing of David as a historical figure. Now we have to, those guys who claim that it was just a mythical figure had to truthfully say, okay, so he's real. We can't. This is a 9th century inscription. So again, it's like 150 years after David, which again doesn't help us. It doesn't say how big is his kingdom. It doesn't give us all kinds of details. It just says, hey, listen, there's this house of David. It's a dynasty. David, is assumed to be the head of it. But that's significant. We also have another 9th century text from Moab that some have constructed to read as another piece of evidence for House of David, although it's debated. This one is the clearest one. From Tel Dan, it's from within the country. It's an Aramean text, monumental or royal text, talking about this Hadad who was involved with in the north. Okay, and we can date this thing pretty well. But there is that's another help for us that David not only existed, but there's a dynasty here, and there it suggests that there's more to David than just being some tribal chieftain, but that there was actually something more there. Okay. So you can actually you can go to the Israel Museum and see it today. It's pretty sweet. I mean, it's like a good sized text. So what do we do with this David and Solomon period? What is our evidence for a possibility of a real kingdom, of a real, what the Bible is trying to communicate? What do we have that we could use as evidence for it that we've talked about? Okay, the Bible, but for many people, the Bible is like, it's doing more of a, it's not trying to communicate a reality. That's how some people would view it. Whereas we might say, no, it's communicating reality. When Solomon when it says Solomon built these places, hey, look, we have evidence of monumental structures that looks like there is some kind of organized system. And it fits with Solomon. In Jerusalem, we do have a structure. We don't have a lot of evidence to go by, but it can be used in the argument to support a claim that there is something in this, in what the Bible calls, or what the Bible is communicating about, a strong, centralized, united monarchy. That it's more than just some kind of tribal chieftain thing, based on this this stepstone structure that may have been used to support a big palatial building, maybe that David or Solomon had built. Why does all this matter? Yeah.
You mentioned about the large stone structure supported by the stepstone structure is possibly the class of David.
That's what some are suggesting, that it's supporting this palatial building of David. That's what Elad Nazar is saying. Others are more hesitant because there's not enough tangible evidence for to really pin down David and say, yeah, this is his building. The city of David, there's this... have you seen this courtyard yet, Peter?
Yeah.
You got to go there. Yeah. So they have these like windows that you can step over and look down.
Yeah.
And there's material remains there, as well as if you keep going to the east and overlook the little railing, you'll see that structure. Right, so that structure is supporting something big on top of it, but it's debatable whether it is David and Solomon, or if it's just before them, or if it was built before them and they're reusing it. So the archaeologist who's digging there now says David and Solomon. I mean, that's kind of a nice... It definitely grabs people's attention a lot more than just saying, well, it's Jebusite. Yeah, it could be. I mean, if you say it, then people have to sort of deal with it and come back at you and argue with it. It's possible.
The stone has been there. Are you saying this courtyard, he discovered it before we've seen it, but are you saying there's new stuff in the city of David in this courtyard?
There's been a few more excavations on top that she has found pottery that can be dated to the 10th century, which is again our United Monarchy David and Solomon.
What about the structure that's being excavated further up the road?
In the parking lot?
Yeah.
In that big pit?
Yeah.
Herbert and I were there 2 weeks ago digging. They have lots of stuff. They do have First Temple period stuff, but again, it's not palace. It's just like homes and things like this.
Okay, so
we want to find a palace. We want to find a big structure that says, yes, the Bible is communicating something accurate. Yeah, I mean, we want to see, you know, Bathsheba's tub and all this. We want to find this.
Exactly.
That's on top of the house.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are... Thankfully, we don't have, you know, we don't have those kinds of archaeologists that are intentionally looking for crazy things like that. That doesn't help us. All this to say is there is evidence to support what the Bible is presenting us as a legitimate united, centralized monarchy under David and Solomon that... that the Bible is accurately portraying. You can, you know, again, archaeology is just one tool, and it can be helpful at times. It can be unhelpful at times. But you have some of the evidence if you get into these conversations in Jerusalem. So, anyways, that was a brief. Presenting some of the problems dealing with David and Solomon. So, questions?
Yeah, of course, you always have the living stones to prove. I mean, King Arthur, number of people based their life around him, but there are a lot of people that base their religion, their life, their whole livelihood, some of them, around King David and King Solomon. So,
yeah. Or at least we're very interested simply because they get a lot of attention. And they are... There's something there with this dynasty that the Bible says God has kept going. And there has been a thread that has been connected to David that continued not just through the end of the Old Testament, but we even know that there are people who kept their, you know... Joseph's family, he knows he's connected to David. Already, that's a whole... How long after... It was 1,000 years after David, and there are still people around who know that their family lines are connected to David. That's pretty remarkable.
That is.
And that we as Christians are connected now to, that there's something in it for us as well, that we're also connected into this story. And so that's a pretty unique piece for us. And again, we're talking about things that are just 2 miles down the road. And that's also very, very unique. So, Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.